everything for Moat.
Yes, indeed. That went out over the air. You heard it here, right?
That's because I just saw Malzy. He's meeting with the bosses. What is happening here? They're going to reunite Starkey and Mueller? Is that what's happening? He sounds... Bob sounds like a cross between Rick Springfield, for good reason, and Elvis Costello there. That sounded like Elvis Costello. Can you play Bob's version of that one more time? This is... It's unbelievable. That sounds like My Aim Is True. You know that album? Of course you don't, Limits, because it was 40 years before your time, but we used to stand over at the park behind my house. Park School, appropriately titled, because it was at a park, was the school. We would stand in the woods with a case of Jenny Cream, just stand there, because you really couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't go to bars yet. And my friend Marshall Reinhardt would crank up My Aim Is True, one of the greatest albums ever made, by Elvis Costello. And we would just stand there and drink and listen to it.
At Park School?
Yeah, at Park School.
How simple is that? Did you? Was it on Road?
It was on Harlem Road. I'll say this too. Winning is the great elixir in sports, isn't it?
Makes everything go away, the problems.
It's unreal how that works. From peewee to high school to travel ball to college to the pros. I told you I was a beat writer for the Penguins for, what was it, 3-4 years? Something like that. And it's unexplainable, or inexplicable might be the better word there. What happens when you're winning? Everything changes. Those little small irritants just disappear like smoke into the wind. Everybody's, not everybody, but mostly everybody's happy. It's a lighter feel to be around the team. When people are joking around, it doesn't feel forced in the locker room. It feels real. The plane rides, the bus rides are more fun. I got a reminder of that last night. My kids' team had a nice win last night, and all of a sudden, everything felt different. It just did. Everything felt different. At least for a night. I've told you the story of seeing Frank Coonley on the street corner. Might have been wild card night, but it was somewhere thereabouts where people were filing over the Clemente Bridge, and PNC Park and the atmosphere around it was playing out and coming to life the way it was designed. This could be a Wrigley Field-like atmosphere. I used to walk over the bridge before the game after I'd go in the clubhouse, do interviews, and you still have a couple hours before the first pitch. I'd walk over there, get something to eat, and walk back, experience the atmosphere. Saw him on a street corner. It might have been a Frank corner at that point. I just remember saying something to the effect of, do any of those old problems matter anymore, Frank? I bet you don't hear from people the way you used to about the payroll and about little incidents like the stroll in up there. None of it matters. Nobody cares. They're all happy because you're winning. All your problems disappear. I'm sure you've noticed that on the teams that you've been on, right?
Exactly. Because
even your wiffle ball team.
Yeah.
Is there dissension when you guys aren't winning?
Honestly, not on my team. I've seen it in other teams, though. It happens on a lot of other teams.
But when you're winning, it's just life is good,
yes.
Right?
I mean,
life is good.
We had that on some of the Baldwin volleyball teams that we had. Like, we had a lot of guys who were really good friends still to this day, but there was some dissension at times.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I remember a night we clinched the playoffs, and it seemed like everything went away.
Yeah, I mean, I remember high school basketball. You know, there's always the tension of who's playing in front of you. I felt like I should have been starting, and this kid was starting because his dad was the gym teacher there, Norm Foster, who incidentally went to Cortland State with my dad many, many decades ago. And, you know, there's always that day-to-day tension. People who aren't playing like they think they deserve to. I was one of them. But then we played a team, I think it was Louport in Buffalo for the right to go to Memorial Auditorium where the Sabres and Braves played. Braves were gone by then. And play for it all locally. And we upset this team to get to Memorial Auditorium. And everything disappeared, man. Everything disappeared. We all loved each other. We were all having the time of our lives. I remember the locker room after that game. A lot of times it was just like, yeah, I'm going out. I'm doing this. See ya at practice Monday. Bye. You know, with that sort of undercurrent of tension from people who don't play. Every sports team is like that, right? And like I said, I was one of them. But when we won that game, we were best friends. We were happy. We were going places. We were going together to Memorial Auditorium. It always strikes me from time to time what winning does and what losing does.
Sharpshooter Starkey took over that day, huh?
Not really, but I do remember a specific play from that game, and thank you for asking. I came into the game late because the gym teacher's son was in foul trouble. And I had a little move that I made sometimes where I snuck up from behind on a ball handler and tipped the ball away from him.
Yeah, I like that move. I like doing that too.
I did that to a kid, pretty good point guard from Louport. Hit the ball away from him, and then you have the advantage because you can turn and run. And Andy Ellis, who had red hair and in whose house I had the first beer of my life.
Congratulations.
Threw a long pass to me. I tapped it away from this kid from behind. I turned and sprinted. Andy Ellis threw me a pass way ahead, caught up to the ball, could sense their big guy, who was a really good player, closing in on me, did a little pump fake. He goes flying past, and I made a big layup late in the game.
Wow, and the crowd went wild.
Congratulations on all my success.
Great
right?
job.
Oh, boy. I was just thinking of that. Thank you for indulging me, Limits. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Let's go to the best of Ben. I want to hear Ben's comments from the Football and Podcast on what he thinks of this offense after the other night. Shall we?
Where would you like to begin, Joe? We have the offensive philosophy. We have Fields. And we also
offensive
have
philosophy.
George Pickens.
And thank you for asking.
Let's do the philosophy.
I understand that you want to be a team that runs the ball and is physical, but when it's not working, stop running your head into the wall. Naj is not getting it done right now. And I'm not saying it's Naj's fault. Naj runs hard. He is doing everything that he can. But the run game is more than just the runner. Yeah. It's the line. It's the tight ends. It's the receivers. It's everybody's involved. And Naj is working really hard, but it's just not there right now. Find other ways to get the ball down the field. And that's what they did on that drive right after coming out of the blue tent too, which is even more surprising. It's like, yes, this is what you want to see. You want to see these shots. I mean, I'll go back earlier in the game. Like, I loved what they did early in the game with Justin. I thought the shot he took to Connor Hayward was a perfect pass.
Yes.
Connor dove for it. We always tell receivers, don't dive. It's hard to tell guys because you're actually faster when you run through a ball instead of dive. People think you need to dive for it. Same reason you don't slide into first base, right? You run through it.
That's good stuff from football, and that really is. And let's break that down a little bit with this offense. Here's the problem with Fields, and Christopher Carter over at the Post-Gazette put this in numbers. He said that the Steelers' offense had been one of the most conservative in the NFL going into this game. However, they did alter the script a little bit in this game, Limits. They did go down the field a little bit. He said through four games, the Steelers were among the teams with the fewest targets beyond the chains. No surprise there, right? And that's something that drives myself and hundreds of thousands of others absolutely crazy.
Including me.
When they don't throw to the chains or beyond to get a first down. He said, but that number got a big boost when Fields threw 14 passes beyond the first down marker, which was still middle of the pack, but a huge upgrade for them or a huge increase. Here's the problem, Limits. His efficiency went way down. And while I'll agree with Ben that pass to Hayward, I think it was a good pass. Hayward isn't the biggest guy in the world, right? We're not talking about a long athlete here. So I don't know. He probably felt the need to dive and stretch. It almost looked like he needed to for that ball. I thought the throw could have, I didn't think it was perfect. I thought it was a good throw, really good throw, but could have been perfect considering who the receiver was. It should have been caught. It should have been caught. But here's the problem. And maybe if it was caught, these numbers would look different. His efficiency went way down Sunday night. He only completed 5 of 14 passes beyond the sticks. That's it. His passer rating was like 80 beyond the sticks. And it was obvious watching it. Yeah, that was a good throw, but there were several that weren't, which underscores one of the main worries about Justin Fields. It's very simple. Can he stand there and beat you from the pocket with intermediate and long throws? His throw to Mount Washington could have been a touchdown. Collinsworth set it on the air. You got to put a little air under that one.
Right. That has to be better.
And one to Van Jefferson down the right side was a horrible throw that was right in the Cowboy cornerback's hands. Should have been intercepted. So he didn't do himself any favors. Moral of the story for me, it's hard, if not impossible, for me to picture Justin Fields doing to a team what Prescott did to the Steelers, which is line up with no threat of a run game. And I'm talking for most of the game. They ran late. I get it. They switched up and ran late. But clearly their game plan was to make up for their lack of a run game by having their quarterback stand back there in the shotgun and boom, 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 boom. One pass after another. Short. Beat their pass rush. Be very accurate. Hit guys in stride and dice them up. Oftentimes from an empty backfield, like Ben was capable of doing. I don't know that the Steelers' offense has that dimension with Fields.
Well, no, and I think part of that is personnel. I think part of it is trust with Fields. I also can't get out of the back of my mind, Joe, the four drops in the game. That was not the only Connor Hayward drop, remember? He dropped a ball that would have been a first down over the middle of the field that was right in his hands. He tried to catch it with his chest, plus the two drops on the sideline by George Pickens and Van Jefferson. That's another 75 yards of offense right there, so that would increase the efficiency number. But regardless, it seemed like in that second half, when it was time to unleash, it's time to go, time to really go behind your quarterback, there were moments where Fields did not capitalize. And that was the concern in Chicago, as well as the turnovers. He's fumbled in every game. There's as many fumbles as games.
I hear you on the drops, too. But bottom line for me in this game, and we talked about it yesterday, was this was a huge chance for Justin Fields to leave no doubt, and he left doubt. He left a lot of doubt. And now I would say going into this game, Sunday night against the Raiders, I think it's the biggest game of Justin Fields' career. This is a gigantic game, because if this goes south early, we may not hear from Justin Fields for a long time.
Well,
the question's been kind of reversed here. We were asking before, are we ever going to see Russell Wilson? I would say if Justin Fields fails in this game, because we're not talking about a rookie. Sometimes I feel like people couch the Fields conversation like he's never played before. This dude is an NFL veteran now. He's a vet. He's played. And this is his chance to stave off Russell Wilson. It's the biggest game of Fields' career, because if Wilson comes in and plays well, he's not losing that job anytime soon.
Well, let's say that Justin Fields goes out against the Raiders and he lights it up.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
You know what the excuse is going to be? Oh, well, he did it against the awful Raiders that were bad against so many other teams. Well, Carolina beat them, and all Max Crosby's banged up, and the Raiders, they're just terrible. And the atmosphere was 75% Steeler fans.
But he would still play the next game. If he has a good game and they win, he's going to play.
He should play.
Would you agree with that?
Yes, but the excuses are going to continue on.
Yeah, they might. They might. Let's hear Ben again on the offense, shall we?
Here's Ben on Justin Fields and how he's progressed so far.
But that's a great throw. I thought the throw down the kind of the seam to Mount Washington was a little high. But it wasn't awful. You're allowed to miss a throw.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was that he was terrible. Did he, you know, there was a ball early that maybe could have got intercepted, but my point in saying is I thought he was throwing the ball well on that drive. Like why are we not going back to that more? And obviously, you got to have protection. The line has to do a better job of protecting. But, man, throw the ball when you get a chance. Where's our wide receiver screens? Where's our tight end slip screens? Where's our running back screens? Like, we have alley screens you can throw. Like get the ball out of your hands and get them to your playmakers quickly.
Wow, I like that. I mean, that's been critiquing, I think, quite fairly, and obviously coming from, I would say, a pretty accomplished offensive mind in Ben. That's him really critiquing Arthur Smith's scheme, which would be Tomlin's in the end, right? The design. I'll say. I want to hear that again. I want to hear what he had to say. I want to hear that exact same thing again to fully digest it, if you wouldn't mind, Wonder Twin.
But that's a great throw. I thought the throw down the kind of the seam to Mount Washington was a little high. But it wasn't awful. You're allowed to miss a throw.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was that he was terrible. Did he? You know, there was a ball early that maybe could have got intercepted. But my point in saying is, I thought he was throwing the ball well on that drive. Like why are we not going back to that more? And obviously, you got to have protection. The line has to do a better job of protecting. But man, throw the ball when you get a chance. Where's our wide receiver screens? Where's our tight end slip screens? Where's our running back screens? Like, we have alley screens you can throw. Like get the ball out of your hands and get them to your playmakers quickly.
That's why people want Ben to be the offensive coordinator, which will never happen, of course. Although he did say, now I forget where, honestly, was it on his, maybe it was on Football, and that he wouldn't mind having a role with the Steelers at some point. And all joking aside on that, why wouldn't you want him to be an offensive consultant?
He should.
Just that. Like, he goes in, you know, on a Monday in an advisory role and says, well, here's what I thought about the game. Here's things that we have, or we had when I was there for sure, that I think would work. Have him for 2 hours, an hour. Like, why wouldn't you want that? You know what I mean?
And I mean, John Elway started out doing that with Denver and moved up the ranks. Not saying that Ben would do that, but there are other quarterbacks who have retired and have consulted in the past.
He's offering his services. He has offered his services. And with stuff like that, I can't imagine why you wouldn't take him up. I'm not saying he's actually gone to the Steelers and offered his services, but what he said the other day made it very clear that he wouldn't mind having some role over there.
Why would Art not give him a call?
Yes.
At least say, like, hey, Ben, you want to come in and just
right.
talk to the guys maybe ever so often?
He could have Artie on the Football and podcast once a week. They could do it there at Ben's house. Drink a little craft beer. They have a chef on hand. And Artie could do the podcast with him. You like that idea?
I think it's a great idea. Could make it a whole Steeler feature. We also have Big Ben guessing as to why he thinks George Pickens was benched on Sunday.
Let's go.
This is me speculating. I don't know. But, you know, I know Coach said after the game or whenever that they were trying to, for lack of better words, conserve his legs, conserve his energy. Maybe less plays would get more production during those plays. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm listening. Again,
you're the alchemist.
I'm just sitting here. Okay. It seems like maybe there was a guy. So basically, are you telling me that if he's in for 59% of the plays, I think last week he played 70 or 80. You got guys like Cam Hayward, who's 30 billion years old, that is out there for 80 or 90% of the plays.
Yeah, Cam's an animal.
And I get he's all pro in this and the other, but he's a lot older, and he just come off of big surgeries.
Yeah.
Surgeries, whatever. What it tells me is he not out there when you know you're running the ball because you know he's not going to block? So is that part of your play? It's like, okay, we're running it. He's not going to block, so we're going to just take him out.
And this is you wondering.
Just guessing. This is just me guessing. Is it some form of punishment because of me wondering, just wondering? Meetings, practice time, not giving it all in practice, is this coach's, like, is it punishment? He says no, but if he's your best, arguably one of your best offensive players, like, why is he not out there? So, there's just some, a little bit of head scratch. Maybe coach will talk about it tomorrow in his press conference, probably won't. But, you know, there was a report this morning of potential trades for him. I can't see that happen. I think you should get a number two in here.
Yeah,
that could help George, because every Batman needs a Robin. I don't know. I don't understand. They're just Like, there needs to be a reason why one of your best players on the field for 59% of the plays. Just let us know what it is. Yeah. I have no idea what it is.
Listen, and that was great stuff too. That's Ben from his football and podcast. The Tomlin news conference yesterday was an absolute farce. Like I said yesterday, I almost wanted to step in like Richard Steele, the old boxing referee, and just say, Mike, please stop. You don't have to do this. You don't have to run cover for that kid like this. This is so easy. Everybody saw it. He quit on routes again. Just tell the world, you know, you guys all saw it, I'm sure. Not acceptable. Going to have a talk with George this week, and it'll be different in Vegas. End of story. Just keep repeating that when people ask you questions. The notion that he wouldn't know still by Tuesday that Pickens had the F word painted on his face for the game, which, as I've said many times, it's not that big of a deal. It's not. But if you believe that the Steelers kind of hold themselves to a different standard, is that acceptable? Really? Is that something you want? Is one of your players on national television with the F word painted on his face? Really? I don't think so. But I guess more to the point, you didn't know about it. I guess congratulations to Mike Tomlin for being literally the only person in the world who even remotely follows football and watches it who didn't know that George Pickens had the F word on his face the other night. Please. And this idea that it was somehow normal, whether it's coming from Tomlin or somebody else, for Pickens to play 59% of the plays is ludicrous. The fewest amount of snaps percentage-wise that he's taken in his career. What are we talking about here? You don't want your best offensive player on the field. The only time I could see that, maybe, is if you're running at will on the Cowboys without Pickens on the field, like everybody else does against the Cowboys, except they weren't. And then don't you also have to consider, and man, how damning is it to hear Ben say, you know he's not going to block. You know he's not going to block. That's embarrassing for Pickens and the Steelers. That everybody in the world knows he's not a willing blocker. Not exactly upholding the Hines Ward tradition around here, but anyway. It would be one thing if you were just running roughshod over them without Pickens on the field. But you weren't. And I would ask, wouldn't the threat of him being on the field, even if he's not going to block, make it worth your while for your run game? Like, doesn't it help your run game to have your best offensive player on the field and therefore have defenses have to worry about him and allocate resources toward him? I think that outweighs the idea or the reality that he doesn't block. Can't block. I think when you're looking at benefits to your run game, just having him on the field would outweigh that, in my opinion. But the notion that a sputtering offense that can't run would logically not have their best player on the field and that there's nothing to see here is insulting to everybody's intelligence. He was benched, period. Okay, Mike Tomlin, like every other coach, twists the truth a little bit at these news conferences. He told the world that last year. You remember that? When he said, sometimes I just say stuff to get you guys going, or sometimes I just say stuff. They all do. Every coach in every sport. And once you admit it, then how can anybody ever believe what you say again at one of these things?